Hello and welcome to the Heat Unmissables podcast, the world's premier weekly pop culture podcast.
Have we got proof of this?
Okay, you can't prove these things, but you can say them.
If you say it, it's true.
Yes. If you build it, they will come. Yeah.
Bodes well for this podcast.
Exactly.
One of my favourite films, Field of Dreams.
Oh, I love Classic. Field of Dreams. Oh, yeah. Kevin Costner's so amazing.
These are not just random voices you're hearing in your head. They are the voices of two excellent, long-serving Heat pop culture experts. Stephanie Seelan, hello.
Hello, Boyd.
Hello. And Kay Rivera. I don't know why you put that voice on. Welcome. How's it going?
I was trying to sound professional.
I'm a bit
hot in this. That's my like professional podcast.
It's not hot at all. It's fine.
Really? It's not hot.
No, it's
okay.
Fine.
So therefore,
why don't you take off that cardigan?
Okay, I'll derobe. I'll leave that for later. Yeah. Let's warm up.
This week we are looking at four tasty TV treats. Yes, it's all TV this week. I mean, I'm going to mention a film in the bit where we talk about what we've been watching. But the main in the meat of the sandwich that is the Unmissables podcast, we've got four new series of television stuff, including the centrepiece, I think it's fair to say, of the BBC's Gay Britannia season, which is commemorating the 50th anniversary of the partial decriminalisation of homosexual acts. Mm. Only partial, Steph.
Only partial.
Not full.
Yeah.
Never forget. The man in the orange shirt. It's actually man in the orange shirt. There's no the. And Kay asked me about this. She didn't believe me when she was looking at the proof.
We had little conversation about it.
For this Spread and Heat magazine.
It should be the.
Well, it should have a definite article.
But
it
just effing doesn't. Okay? So it's just man in the orange shirt. And that stars, among others, the legend Vanessa Redgrave.
Oh. And Francis de la Tour.
Frankie de la Tour. We're also looking at a new documentary that's going out on Channel 4 called Public Enemies, Jay-Z versus Kanye. You can see what that's about from the title. Or is it? We're also looking at, we've done loads of Netflix shows recently, so I thought it was about time we did an Amazon Prime because they are their leading competitor in the streaming TV business.
Spread the love.
Spread the love. And their new series, The Last Tycoon, drops this Friday in its entirety on the Prime. And we'll be reviewing that. It stars Frasier, among other people. Kelsey Grammer. And finally, Insecure, which will be on Sky Atlantic and Now TV from next Thursday. And that is the second season. I don't know if either of you have watched season one.
It's the second season.
The HBO. It's on HBO in America, show which has got high acclaim. But what
all
do
the
you
acclaim.
Think?
Full acclaim.
But what do we think? That's more important, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what they're really waiting for.
It doesn't matter what acclaim they've got, it's what about we think.
Exactly. So, yes, four tasty TV treats. But before we look at those, it's the traditional first section of the podcast where I ask, what have we been watching and been excited about and this, that and the other? Kay's looking at me like she's got something exciting to say.
Well, no, I took your recommendation and I started watching Top of the Lake 1.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so pleased.
GFY, yes, good for you.
Yes, I did. But what I would say is, because I watched it on Sky, I could only watch episodes 1 to 4 because they're repeating it. So I'm still a bit behind from you guys. Oh. But, oh my God, it makes more sense.
It's on iPlayer.
Isn't it amazing?
It's not Sky, it's BBC, it's on iPlayer.
Sorry, I was viewing it through Sky, through the iPlayer.
Oh, right. iPlayer on the Sky platform.
Oh, but what do you think of it?
I really liked it. And do you know what explains so much about her character, right?
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I have to say, obviously, there were some spoilers because I watched the first episode of season two.
Yeah, and we obviously spoiled
it for you. Yeah, and you kind of told me a big thing about it. So I knew something that had happened. But it's very enjoyable and I'm happy I'm catching up.
Yeah.
But so you think we were right to tell people to watch the first one before trying to go.
Absolutely, watch the first one before the second one. That always makes sense in life. maybe don't skip over the spoiler part because something that happens,
you mean skip over the spoiler part of our podcast?
Yeah, of course.
Oh God. Oh,
yeah, because you spoiled it for me. Oh. But anyway, listen. I enjoyed Top of the Lake and it was good.
Good.
Funnily enough, I had a conversation this morning on the Twitter on my way to work with esteemed film critic Nigel Floyd, who I used to cover the Wittertainment Mark Kermode, Simon Mayo show on Radio 5 Live with for a long period in the glory days. And Nigel asked me, because he's aware that...
Feels like these are the glory days,
These are the secondary glory days. Nigel Floyd was interested in the fact that Top of the Lake is going out both as a weekly thing on BBC Two, which is what we mentioned last week on the podcast, from Thursday at 9 o'clock, and at the same time is being made available as a box set binge on the iPlayer. And he was asking me, what their strategy is and how this makes sense, because he's like, well, why wouldn't everyone just watch it, binge it on it at the same time? Why are they still showing it weekly? And I
I'm one of those people who would watch it weekly.
Right. Well, I replied
to build up the anticipation. Absolutely. To watch it old school and to have something to look forward to rather than just.
So interesting, because most people still, the vast majority of people in this country, people on the ground, are watching TV in a linear, as they call it, fashion.
Is that
live.
True?
Yes, it's absolutely
pogs.
True.
I'm with the pogs. Hashtag pogs.
The vast majority of normal people watch TV when it goes out on their television set. Now, obviously, the younger people, as they, you know, are kind of watching it, time shifting as it's called, and watching it on iPlayer, box sets, and illegally downloading or whatever. But most people in this country still are watching stuff linearly.
That is shocking to me.
The BBC particularly, if it's going to decide, like, as they have with this series, I think brilliantly, to make it available as a binge watch for us trendy Netflix viewing types, that's great. But the majority of people will still watch it on a weekly basis. It's quite
interesting. And all the figures count, so it doesn't matter,
right? Yeah, all the figures count, yeah.
Yeah, it's just because we're so impatient. I just can't know that something's out there and been filmed and not. And no, it's also just to beat the internet, because I don't want somebody else to tell me what happened.
Well, he was also saying, Nigel, also that's then asked that. Well, he said, well, you know, how do people talk about it on social media? Because are they going to spoil it for each other? I was like, well, yeah, but that's true.
Tell
of anything
him to tune
drops.
In for the podcast.
Well, yeah, you tell him that I'm spoiling stuff.
Get all the spoilers
here. I'm Nigel.
But the thing is that this happens anyway with big shows on Netflix and Amazon Prime, because, you know, when they drop, people don't know when they're going to start talking about it, if they're going to watch the whole series in a weekend. So that exists. That problem exists anyway. Anyway, Steph, I thought I'd mention that. Yeah, what have you been watching this week?
Well, I really weirdly, the only thing that I've watched in a linear fashion, actually for years and years, I watched The End of Fearless. Did you see it?
No,
the Finder Fearless. So we reviewed it on the podcast.
I
Helen McCrory.
Yeah.
And I was
Last week, you, John Bishop had been sent away,
right?
And you're happy about
so
that.
So I was the one who, I think, I didn't like it as much as everyone else. But weirdly enough, I'm the one who's continued watching it. And I.
That's because Bishop's gone now.
Well, yeah, when I heard Bishop was off, I was like, yes, this is for me. And it was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Great ending. I'm obviously not going to spoil it.
So you were happy with the ending?
Very happy with the ending. And it's definitely set up for another series. I think Helen McCrory is such a brilliant character.
Yeah.
Long may she continue. Yeah. Long may she reign.
She is great, isn't she? Yeah. Oh, I'm pleased that... is that the only thing you watch linearly?
Honestly, I haven't watched anything in a linear fashion for years.
Wow.
Steph, you've got to get linear.
You're so modern. You are the modern person.
I am.
Yeah,
I have got a lot of spare time.
Yeah. I went to a screening this week of a new BBC series called Quacks. Which is
I love that name.
Comedy. You know James Wood, who wrote Rev? Do you watch Rev, the brilliant comedy series?
No, but I heard
about that young reverend.
About the vicar, yeah. Yeah. And it was really good, and it kind of dealt with issues of religion and society, this, that, and the other, but it was really, really funny, week in, week out. This is his new thing, and it's about a doctor and a dentist and a psychiatrist at the birth of all of these things in, like, the 19th century. And it's really, really funny. And it starts, but the funniest thing about it, Rupert Everett's in it. As this really pompous kind of boss of the hospital.
Oh, I can see that, London. Though.
And he's brilliant. He's so funny in it. I was very impressed. And that'll be coming out soon. I'm sure we'll review it when it comes out soon. And I saw this film called Maudie. Have you seen the posters?
Oh, I saw a poster for that. Because it's got that, Sally Hawkins. Hawkins. Oh, I love her.
Now, is it just me? Or is the poster for this film one of the worst, least appetising posters
I've
ever seen in my life?
Let's tweet it.
I'm going to show you. The thing is, I was trying to find the poster, but I just found the poster that they've got on Wikipedia isn't the one that's on the underground.
That's it.
That's that.
The underground poster is really weird, because I saw it yesterday.
Yeah.
And I thought they look like they've macked thingy. What's the man's name? Why can't I think of his name?
Ethan Hawke.
Yeah. Ethan Hawke. They look like he was macked in next to her. It was very, very. It is
a
strange
terrible.
Poster. Why is it?
It just is a mess.
Doesn't give you any idea of what it's about either.
What is
it about? It's a true story.
So it's a true story about this woman, this much abused and put on woman who had arthritis from a very young age, and she kind of was like doubled over, kind of, you know, and had a kind of limp, and was a tiny little kind of woman who, because any kind of physical defect in that time, so this is in like early 20th century Nova Scotia, not that early actually, but you know, it got a long time ago, and she was kind of considered to be basically like a freak by her own family, by her brother, and it's really sad. And then one day, this guy, the Ethan Hawke character, this is all kind of the true story, walked into the kind of the local kind of market where she was shopping.
Falls in love with her.
Put a sign up saying he needed a housemaid, a housekeeper, to help him look after his tiny little house. Mm. And he's this kind of guy who sells fish and has all kinds of dodgy dealings. And he's very angry, this angry, weird man who doesn't ever speak. She saw this sign, took it, and she decided this is her way out of her life. Goes to see him and say, I will be your new housemaid. They ended up getting married, spoiler alert. It's all true story. Okay. And she ends up being this really famous painter. Because she and her like hobby is like painting these little postcards and painting these very innocent, you know, like naive painting, I think it's called, of like trees and birds and dogs and stuff. You know, seemingly rudimentary. But this woman saw them, who's from New York and came to live in Nova Scotia and thought they were kind of amazing. And it spread like wildfire. And she ended up selling one to Richard Nixon at the time.
Oh, wow.
When he was vice president. Yeah. And it was this incredible story. So it's a really interesting story. And she's amazing. Sally Hawkins is absolutely incredible as this woman. And it's weird seeing Ethan Hawke playing that role, I have to say. But it was a really interesting film.
Yeah, so this is the fishing film that Charles was...
This is the film, yeah. So our esteemed film editor, Charles Gant, sends emails about new films coming out. And he couldn't get to the screening, so I had to go and see it instead of him, basically. He was like asking me, okay, whether he wants to see it. And the description of it is literally like a woman suffering from all these ailments and can barely move and can barely walk. And her husband is a fishing salesman, basically. It's like, oh, yeah,
and we were like, attractive. Yeah, I'm kind of busy.
I mean, it was really attractive. Set in Nova Scotia in the 19th century.
Yeah, so Boyd went.
So I went. But it was good. It was interesting.
How many stars?
Probably give it 3.5, 4 stars, yeah.
When's it out?
It's out in a few weeks, yeah.
Yeah. Maudie.
Maudie.
And that's her name, I'm assuming.
Yeah, her name is Maud/Maudie, yeah.
Maudie's
cute. Anyway, the crux, the meat, let's move on to these four, as I'm calling them, tasty TV treats. Starting with Man in the Orange Shirt, which is, as I mentioned in the introduction, the centrepiece of the BBC's Gay Britannia season. So this is a season, I think it started already. It's mostly on BBC Two, but there's also shows on BBC Four, and I think there's iPlayer-only things. And it's basically commemorating the 50th anniversary of when gay acts were decriminalised, most of them, but not all of them. And it's kind of like, you know, so basically 50 years ago, if you were gay and you entered into any kind of relationship with another man, it was illegal and you could be imprisoned, and lots of people were imprisoned.
It's incredible to think now, right?
It's incredible to think.
And it's such recent history. It's just
very
scary.
Recent history. So this is a two-part drama, Man in Orange Shirt. It's a new story. It's written by novelist Patrick Gale, who's kind of a very, very popular, successful literary novelist. But he created this story especially. So he was commissioned by the BBC, said, can you, this esteemed gay novelist, you know, create us a special story in drama for BBC Two, commemorating this fact, this decriminalisation, and kind of touching upon gay male life in the last 50, 60 years, basically. So it was a huge kind of ambition, task they set him. And it's been years in the making, and he's written it, and it's in two parts. Originally it was going to be in three parts, and I might mention that later. Mm. It stars Oliver Jackson. So the first part is set in the past. It starts at the end of the Second World War, 1944, when Oliver Jackson's Cohen's character, Captain Berryman, who's a soldier in the army. He meets this artist called Thomas March, played by James McArdle, and he's a war artist. His job is to paint, you know, war imagery, and certainly those jobs existed. And they fall in love, but of course it was completely illegal, and they had to keep it totally secret. Meanwhile, Oliver Jackson's current character has a long-time girl that he's known, considers kind of like a sister more than anything. He's known since childhood, played by Joanna Vanderham in episode one. And he ends up marrying her because he can't live the gay life because it is illegal and it's scary and doesn't want to go through that, thus infuriating, obviously, his lover, Thomas, who kind of somehow would want to maintain that relationship. That's the kind of first part. And then the second part, so that's all in hour one. Hour two, which follows the following week, is a modern contemporary story with the character. Now, Kay's looking at me because she's like, how much of this am I going to explain? Mm. I will say, because you're right.
No, because I haven't seen the second episode.
No, I haven't either.
You see, it's literally set 60 years later, right. And that's another gay love story touching upon similar issues about how kind of the whole history of what's happened to gay men has affected this particular one individual and why he has intimacy issues. This and that. It's really interesting. So it's kind of like two
separate,
connected? But there is a connection, and the connection is the character played by Joanna Vanderham in this is the woman that the gay guy marries, has to marry, and she ends up, as we'll discuss in a minute, what happens to her is a terrible, tragic, sad thing. And we see her as a grandmother in the second part to this lad, to this guy.
She's Vanessa
played
Redgrave's
by Vanessa Redgrave.
Character. Yeah. So you see her in the first one,
yeah,
and you see a picture of yes, her husband.
Yes.
As well.
So the man
so
in
you
the
know they're already you already know they're related.
Right. So there's paintings. Yeah. So there's like these he's a painter as well. The young guy, and he paints a picture of the guy in an orange shirt, mm, and that becomes an important
the
painting in their
shirt.
Lives. In the orange shirt, in an orange shirt.
No, man in orange shirt. K.
Yeah. Man in orange shirt. Anyway, I think I've kind
that's
of explained
very
vaguely what the whole thing is. Yeah. What did you think of this centerpiece of the Gay Britannia season, Stephanie Seelan?
I found this so devastatingly sad. It really made me feel so upset. I was actually in tears just because I think mostly because I thought Oliver Jackson Cohen was such an incredible actor, and I really felt his desperation at being torn between having all these. There's a bit where some of the letters that he's written to Thomas, his wife finds them, and it just. I felt like it absolutely ripped my heart apart, if I'm honest. And that's not an exaggeration. It's really, he's so good in it. You really do feel like, God, what an anguished situation he's in. It's so terrible. So, I thought it was really beautifully done. It's really, I think it's really hard to portray how horrendous it must have been, because yeah, it seems so ridiculous to us now that it would... Somebody could be put in jail for their sexuality, but I think they've played it perfectly. And there's a bit where Thomas is put in jail for yeah, a year. And I found that scene absolutely amazing, because what happens is when he gets out of jail, there's actually a group of his friends yeah, who are his homosexual friends who are there to meet him and are very, obviously very accepting, but all living in kind of this very sort of underground way. And then also Oliver Jackson Cohen's character is there on the other side of the street. And just the difference between the way that he's being accepted and he's allowed to, he's been living this as much as he can, living this gay, yeah, gay life, and how Oliver Jackson Cohen's character is trapped is just...
Well, at that point,
done.
Yeah, that's already. I was about to spoil something. Yeah, because that moment is really key, because Oliver Jackson Cohen thinks he can.
It's a pivotal moment.
Thinks maybe he has got an escape yeah, plan of kind of escape, as in escaping from his essentially
his
not loveless
setup.
Marriage. But I think he, in a way, he loves the
he
woman,
does, but,
he?
As,
but
a
not
sister,
as a sister,
like,
yeah,
yeah.
But obviously, you know, completely forced marriage by himself more than anything. And then he thinks he's got an out, doesn't he? When his lover is coming out of
yeah,
out of prison. But that, without wanting to spoil it, it isn't at all.
It's
and that's
an incredible
horrendously
scene.
Moving moment. Kay?
For me, the scenes that stood out were like, when he comes back from the war, he doesn't tell his soon-to-be wife, Flora, that he's back. And he just spends his time in a cottage with his lover. Mm. And it's like this domestic bliss they're living in. You realise, you know, this is what they could have. And then the bubble bursts. And he says to the... What's the...
Thomas.
Is it Thomas?
Yeah. Yes.
When he says, oh, you know, like, what do you think we're going to do? Set up as... home as man and wife.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh God, it's just so
tragic. Yeah, because they have like
a
week or so, I think, of domestic bliss.
Yeah, it's like a lost
because,
week where they
right,
just get
because,
to be together.
Because there's this cottage in the country that is in his family, and they
okay,
can
his
go
parents
there and escape.
Who died.
So
yeah,
no one knows they're
so
there.
So it's their bolt holes.
They can do what they want.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like freedom is in this. But the reality is, of course, they can't maintain that. They've got to somewhere live their lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, the other scene was when they get married. So he gets married to Flora.
Yeah.
And horrendously asks Thomas to be best man, which is just like, how can he bear
yeah,
to do that?
But it's the scene. He is his best friend as well.
No, of course. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, how can, you know, Thomas yeah, as like being brokenhearted, how could he even go through that? But like, there's a scene in the toilet afterwards where, you know, Thomas is trying to convince him, look, it's not too late, even
yeah,
now it's not too late, and they have this like physical altercation. He's like, look, it is too late, and if you had any decency, you know, and you know what's good for you, you need to do the same, like move on. It's just so tragic, but it's a beautiful love story. I really like Frances de la Tour in it, because
yes,
she is Thomas's mother,
yes,
and she portrays this really sympathetic
yeah,
actually remarkably sympathetic mother,
yeah,
who's
yeah,
like encouraging Oliver Jackson Cohen's
yeah,
character.
She's
yeah,
very accepting, isn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, she is very
yeah,
accepting and saying, like, you know, he's in love with you.
Yeah.
You know, he's under your skin. You're under his skin. You need to go visit him in prison and stuff. But I actually thought it was interesting because at the beginning, I didn't feel very sympathetic towards the wife. And I was like, she's very hard. And, you know, obviously because you blame her in a way, even though it's wrong because, you know. But by the end, I actually felt very sorry for her.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I thought,
I think that's the best thing about it, because I think yeah, a lot of this season, because it is about, this is all about decriminalising gay male. I mean, obviously, it was kind of different for lesbians. Obviously, you know, it was almost impossible to be a lesbian and out open lesbian in this period as well. But it was specifically gay male sex acts that were illegal. Yeah. So a lot of this season is about men, and I think a lot of people have felt, you know, oh, it's too much about men. You know, it's too. Where are the women? Whereas I think the brilliant thing about this drama, both parts, is actually it's kind of all about Flora, really.
Yeah.
And as you'll see in the second part, when she's much older, played by Vanessa Redgrave, there's still a lot of anger, a huge amount of anger there. And devastating. She's massively homophobic, and the main character in the second episode, who's this young guy who's kind of living a very modern gay life with, you know, apps on his iPhone, this, that, the other, who's her grandson. Not her son, her grandson, rather confusingly. So there's a whole. I'll talk in a little bit about. There's a missing middle chunk of the story, if you like. But he's a grandson, and he kind of goes to see. He's kind of living in her basement, and she has big issues about his lifestyle because she's still furious and angry about what happened to her. And this all comes to a head. That the brilliant thing about it being these two stories of different time zones, separated by decades, is that this thing still has a huge effect.
The one constant
on all these people,
is how,
and she it has a. More than anyone, really, has an effect on her, the woman. I think it's brilliant how... And there are other really strong, interesting female characters
Think what she does really brilliantly, actually, is she kind of really displays the misconception and about homosexuality. And actually, she's done that... They've done that really, really well because she's not a horrible person. She just... This is... She doesn't understand this.
No, she's just been
devastated She's been brought up in a world where this is completely... alien to her. She doesn't understand it. And it's ruined her life.
And how would any woman react?
Of course.
You know, she's been in love with him, not as a sister. I think that's the strong impact. She's, you know, he is this handsome man in her life.
Yeah.
Deeply in love with him. He marries her. Had his baby. He marries her. And she suddenly discovers in his drawer passionate love letters to this guy. I mean, it's completely natural that she should react in that way. Horrified and angry and furious. And then... You know, somehow to try and kind of live her life and cope with the fact that she knows her husband is obsessed and in love with this other guy.
I am interested to watch the second episode because the one thing I didn't like about it is just that the top and the tailing with the dual story. I was like, oh, I don't think it needs this, but if it's going to...
Yeah, so it opens kind of like in the present, isn't it, with the Vanessa Redgrave character. And then it's like all flashback. I think that's kind of... Just to kind of set the scene of the fact that there is a second part. Because if you didn't do that, you might think, oh, this is a completely self-contained
story. It's a little clunky, though.
Story. Maybe, yeah. So what I do want to say quickly, because I went to the screening of this. I think I mentioned it in the previous podcast. At the BFI, Vanessa Redgrave was there, and she was unbelievable. She was just holding forth in the most incredible way about everything. Donald Trump, Netflix, everything.
That.
She was just like talking about the whole modern world. It was unbelievable. And how kind of... moved she was to be in this two-part film. But what the writer said was, which was so interesting, that he planned it originally as a three stories connected by the same characters, and the middle part was going to be her son, so not the grandson. So there is this slightly odd, when you watch the second half, you think, oh, who is this young guy? Because he's living with her. And they don't make it crystal clear for a long time how they're all related. So there's a slightly mysterious element of it. He's not the son because he's young. He's pretty young. He's the grandson. And then the son, her son, was going to be in the middle part. And it's all going to be about how he becomes a closeted Tory MP in the time of Margaret Thatcher.
Oh.
And it was all going to be about, because you remember she passed Clause 28, you know about that? Your youngsters. It was a big anti-gay piece of legislation. It was going to deal with all that. It was going to be very political.
So wait a minute. So the son is gay?
Yeah.
So and the grandson is gay.
Yeah. So it was all about three generations of the gay men and how they're all affected by the legislation
and society.
Well, I think people decided. I think, you know, he was implying that in the end everyone thought it was just too much. Maybe that it was too much. So there were these three generations, not just two generations. I mean, I think I'm sure it happens. But I think people felt that it was just going to be slightly out of kilter, this middle section, which sounded like it was going to be very political and kind of, you know, reflecting.
And maybe he didn't need it
Thatcher.
As well. Like,
and in the end, it doesn't need it, I think. I mean, I think both parts work really well. But there was a certain sense, I felt watching the second half, and it would be interesting to see whether you agree, there's something a bit mysterious and missing, but they almost turn it into a slight mystery is how it works in the second part.
I'm going to watch it, so we should talk about it next week.
Anyway, I think we've talked in a slightly overcomplicated way enough about Man in an Orange Shirt. As we want to do. It is on Monday, next Monday, 31st of July at 9 p.m, and part two will be the following week. How many stars, Kay Ribeiro, are you going to give it?
I'm going to give it 4.5 stars.
Stephanie Seelan.
I am going to give it also 4.5 stars.
I'm going to give it the full-on Five stars, because I think it is so moving.
It is incredibly
moving.
It's
beautiful.
In sharp contrast, Jay-Z and Kanye.
Wow.
We like a gear change.
They're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the partial decriminalisation. No, they're not. They are in a one-off Channel 4 documentary called Public Enemies. I get the sense that this is kind of like, could be the start of a series, couldn't it? Where, like, you know, people
I
who have...
I presumed it was.
Well, right? They haven't said it is. I mean, I've printed out the press release for you. It says, Channel 4 has commissioned a brand new one-off documentary about the meteoric rise and colossal falling out of two of the world's most iconic pop stars. That's okay. What it says, Kate.
So you think it'll just be all different feuds?
I think it will, yeah.
That'd
think,
be
like,
great,
you know,
wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think if enough people watch this, then they'll go, oh, let's find out other celebrity feuds. And
I mean, they won't have to look far.
They will
They won't have
this.
To look far. So it's a one-off documentary. It's on Channel 4 next Monday. It's next Monday, 31st July, 10 o'clock. So as soon as you finish watching Man in Orange Shirt, you can turn over to Channel 4 and watch this if you want to keep in touch with all the things we do on this podcast, which, by the way, feedback always welcome.
Oh, yeah.
At Boyd Hilton, at Carrie Barrow, at Steph Seelan.
Didn't we get some feedback
hashtag
this week?
Hashtag Pogs. Oh, yeah, I've got some lovely feedback. Yeah, good point. From
Let's name lovely people, our friends.
Neil Lark, at Neil Lark, N-E-I-L-L-A-R-K, mm-hmm. or Neil Lark.
Nilar. He's going to end up with more followers than we are.
He's also known as Open Season on Twitter.
Right.
He said very nicely to me, he said he moseyed over from my Arsta podcast. I've got an Arsta podcast, which is
don't
currently
do cross
on hiatus.
Pronouns,
I'm just reading what he said.
Okay, fine. Look. Don't go to that podcast.
Really love the pod. Talking about this one. Now so does my wife and 19-year-old movie-loving son. Great work. Hashtag pops.
What's his wife's name, does it say?
I mean, say what his wife's
maybe
name
that's
is.
Too much information for him to give out.
He didn't say what his wife's
name. We need
name
more
is.
Details.
Maybe his wife can tweet me. But yeah, any please God review and rate it on iTunes and this, that, and the other. And
did he hashtag
it.
Pogs?
He hashtag Pogs.
Yeah, send more feedback.
Living legend, Neil Lark.
Oh, living legend.
Anyway, that was interrupting the fact that we're reviewing Public Enemies, Jay-Z v. Kanye on Channel 4. Who wants to kind of summarise what the hell this programme is apart from what I've said so far already?
I can... Please,
do you want to... No,
okay. Come on.
Right, okay, so this is... basically showing you the roots of where Kanye came from in his kind of suburban town of Chicago and Jay-Z from Mercy Projects in Brooklyn. And it's all about how their meteoric rise to fame and how they then came together and indeed how they fell out. And it includes home video footage. It's got friends. And interestingly, it's really only got friends of Kanye talking on this, which was one of my sort of problems. No, it doesn't have any Jay-Z friends. Boyd's looking at me.
No,
he doesn't. It's just
that didn't occur to me.
Because,
you just
well,
said
I think really that is one of the major points about it. So it's all about how Jay-Z has made himself into this gigantic, amazing business tycoon and how for years and years he kind of kept Kanye at arm's length, which I had no idea about.
I didn't know.
But eventually signed him to Rockefeller, his label.
Yeah.
And behind Jay-Z's back, Kanye releases some music because Jay-Z's like, no, we're just going to keep you as a producer. And then how their fallout was kind of rumbling for years and years and years. And
didn't it all start with, sorry, go on.
I found that's what I found really interesting because obviously you know about the modern day spats they have, right? You know, when Kanye was like rambling on stage about, you know, Jay, just call me after the Paris burglary, and Jay-Z apparently didn't call him to check on Kim, etc. But what I didn't realize is that when he signed him to Rockefeller
Records,
that he only wanted him to do the beats, he only wanted to be a producer, and so they basically bought him up to shelve him so that he couldn't be a rapper because they were all like, no, Kanye hasn't got it.
Yeah,
he hasn't got what it takes.
But it all started seemingly when Jay-Z had the big celebration in New York. Fade to Black album, where he was allegedly retiring. Of course, he didn't retire.
Of course, he was never going to
retire. And he didn't invite Kanye to this.
Not only didn't he invite him, he said he could buy tickets, apparently.
What a diss.
Yeah, it was basically, for his whole life, Jay-Z's been saying to Kanye, get back in your box.
Yeah.
He's been saying...
Well, there's also the age difference, right? So it's like this, Kanye's 8 years younger, so like he's this young pretender, you know, and you know what Kanye's like, and by all accounts, it's what he was like from the beginning, which was, you know, he's very like OTT, in your face, and Jay-Z's not like that, so he's like, yeah, okay, you know, not cool, just keep away.
But they obviously do eventually come together because they make the album Watch the Throne, which is obviously
best album.
The best time of Kanye's life, I have to say, and it really comes across as that. But then obviously now they've fallen out again, which is ridiculous. But what the most, I don't know about you, Kay, because I know that Kay and I are both big Jay-Z and Kanye fans. I came out of this feeling so sorry for Kanye because I didn't realise that actually he was so desperate to be a rapper, and he was just, he's looking, it's like he's been looking all his life from acceptance from Jay-Z, and Jay-Z is just not prepared to give it. And then he did this album with him and he thought he finally got there, and now he's got this big diss again.
I completely agree.
It's just, it was just really sad.
He's like, because for him, Jay-Z was kind of like a father figure, always looking for acceptance, and he's just dissed him throughout. I also love the fact about, I knew this anyway, about Through the Wire being when Kanye was involved in that car accident. He fell asleep at the wheel and then had his jaw all wired up and started, you know, created this amazing, amazing, amazing song, which is what kicked it all off.
Did you think, because in the there's a load of brilliant footage, so I was really interested in the footage of them when they were young. There's amazing footage of both of them, really, like years when they were, before they were famous, showing off their rap skills of varying degrees of varying degrees of skillfulness, I think. And it's kind of, it kind of punctures the whole image of them, I think, that stuff, because do you know what I mean? Because just because they're both really being really sweet and kind of craving for acceptance and fame and showing and trying to show the people around them how good they are at rapping. Particularly Kanye, like, he's this sweet little guy. You know, and they talk about how he's from this very middle class background, not from the streets at all.
His mum was Dr. Donda.
Yeah, Doctor. Yep.
He's from a middle class background.
Yeah, but more than that, just the early footage just shows him being a kind of just this sweet little guy, almost like kind of.
But I think anyone starting out is sweet. I mean, and anyone who knows Kanye knows that he is a sweet guy. He's always just wanted to do his music. He's an artist, you know. Yeah. Like,
but his image, nevertheless, his image now is one of this of kind of huge power and, you know, kind of egomania and all of that, isn't it?
Yeah, like, but what they do make a real big point about is the fact that actually, before his mother died, all of his beats, all of his music was actually quite uplifting. Yeah. And since Donda died, it's kind of taken a dark turn. And it is really noticeable. All of his stuff now is pretty mizzy, isn't it?
Mizzy. But amazing.
Miserable.
Is that what the people on the ground?
Pogs. Mizzy. That's
what Pogs are saying.
Yeah.
Miserable. Did you think it was anything like, obviously there hasn't got access to anyone really, like, hasn't got access to them or anyone really close to them, has it? It's got access to people who knew them when they were young. There's a lovely teacher. I love the teacher.
Oh, yeah, actually, yeah, that is Jay-Z. Jay-Z's teacher. That is.
He said he was adorable.
So he was adorable and sweet. Again, all these things about how sweet they are, I think I'm not saying it undermines them in any way. I'm just saying it actually humanizes them. They're such kind of towering presences.
The man behind the myth.
Yeah, I think meeting the teacher of them, you say, oh, he's a really sweet, intelligent kid. I think that makes them feel like normal human beings rather than these icons that they've become, these kind of, you know, very distant figures. But, and I did think one of the best things about the documentary is it made them feel human to me, both of them.
But I think you need that in there, because the truth is actually, and one thing that I didn't know about Jay-Z was, well, among the many things I found out about Jay-Z,
super smart
was
that, he was.
No, is that actually he was still dealing crack when Reasonable Doubt, the album, was out, which is his first album. And I thought that was really shocking. So actually, he dropped out of high school and he became a drug dealer in Marcy Projects, like many, many people in Marcy Projects, because that was just the way of it. And they say, that's just what you do. That's just what you did. Yeah. And the really, really fascinating thing for me is they were like, if he hadn't been a drug dealer, if he hadn't learnt how to
hustle,
to work that business, he wouldn't be where he is now. Business is business. That's what they were saying. And I thought that was fascinating.
Well, we all learned a valuable lesson that if you want to start
if you want to start a business,
it's a pretty good education.
Just keep
hustling. Go on Dragon's Den.
Yeah.
I'd love to see Jay-Z on Dragon's Den.
Now, is there any more to this, though? My big question is this just a kind of fairly gossipy, you know, kind of slightly simplistic look at this so-called feud? And I mean, in a way, the feud doesn't really kick in until about halfway through the documentary. Yeah. Or, because this, let me just read you this line from the press release and ask you whether this is true. And it reveals an even bigger story of how race, wealth, and celebrity are shaping modern America. Does it do that at all?
No.
No, it doesn't really.
No,
it touches upon it.
Does it?
Yeah, okay. Because, you know, I mean, it touches upon, you know, how involved they've been in politics and their support for the different political candidates. I mean, including about Kanye supporting Trump, which is the only thing that I disagree with Kanye on.
Unbelievable. What an idiot.
I think it's interesting. I think it touched upon it, but it's not like it's not at the epicenter of this documentary.
But, you know, bottom line is it's a very interesting, entertaining hour of insights into them, isn't it?
I think you need to look at more than Kanye and Jay-Z to see what kind of influence they're having. But yeah, I suppose it is interesting what they were saying about, well, the thing that I found disappointing about is that when I got really interested is when they talked about Jay-Z's, you know, when he married Beyonce, when he met Beyonce, and what they are doing as a couple together.
I completely agree.
And I actually, it felt like it could have had a second part, which was actually about, because I think part of Kanye's acceptance is marrying Kim. I think he thought that Jay-Z would be like, oh, you've married this amazing mogul now who's got $100 million and I've got this, you know. And I think he at every turn he thought he thinks he's doing something that is going to level them off, and it obviously hasn't.
I wanted more in depth, like, look at that as well. I think they didn't go far enough. Like, so they've kind of stopped at a certain point. They haven't covered off, you know, the fact that, you know, when Kanye had their outburst with Taylor Swift because of Beyonce, you know, all these things. They didn't really touch upon that. And also his relationship with Kim and how actually Beyonce and Kim don't get on. And so that's a further thing that, you know, adds fuel to
that. So you like wanted another few hours of it.
Listen, I want this to be a 10-hour documentary.
Yeah, okay.
Because he's such a... The thing is, he is a fascinating... They're both fascinating characters. But Kanye, I think this gave you much more about Kanye that you didn't know. And I thought it gave me a feeling of intense sadness about his life, actually, because I just thought, oh, right, okay, well, he had his mum, and, he, you know, there's that bit where he says, well, she was everything, she came to everything. And then when she died, he was looking for somebody, some support, and he just doesn't have that.
But anymore. You know what? I think he's fine.
Listen, it's fueled my love for Kanye.
I think he's okay.
No, I don't think he is fine. I think take away all the money and all the fame. I don't think he is fine.
Let's text him.
All right. We'll find out, yeah. Kanye, if you're listening, do tweet us.
At Boyd Hill,
and that's definitely in, hashtag
Pops. If you don't hashtag, we are not going to mention it, so.
How many stars would you give Public Enemies : Jay-Z versus Kanye, Channel 4, Monday, Thursday of July, 10 p.m, Kate?
3.5 stars.
Steph?
I'll give it 3.
Yeah, I'll give it 3, yeah. I think it's a decent watch.
Yeah.
Now then, The Last Tycoon is the new series starting on Amazon Prime. It's not starting, on dropping in its entirety, all 9 episodes, I think, this Friday, 28th of July. It's based on the classic novel by F. Scott Fitzgerald, one of my favourite writers, Kay. Don't know about
Gatsby's
you.
Gatsby's your favourite, isn't it?
Gatsby's my favourite, but I like all of them. And this was, I think this was his last novel. And
unfinished novel.
Exactly, unfinished novel. Now, I'm about to describe it, but I feel like one of you should probably do that because I've already spoken too much. How do you feel about having to explain what the hell The Last Tycoon is, Kay? I can see it. I don't know. You're like shuffling your papers.
Yeah. I'm into
slightly,
it.
Slightly, yeah.
She
happy
can do
to
it.
Do that?
Go
I
on.
Can do it. I've
okay.
got, listen, I've got this in
Go
front.
For
it's
it.
Fine. Okay, so basically there is... it's all about the movie industry in the 30s.
Yes.
30s, 40s? Yeah.
Yeah.
And how glamorous it was. But it's about this studio and the studio boss, played by Kelsey Grammer, who is trying to launch his own film on his own. He wants to be like the movie maker, the big man. And he tries to do it, has to be said, unsuccessfully. There's a guy called... Oh, God.
Monroe?
Yes, Monroe. Mm. Sorry, oh, my God, I'm doing a Boyd.
Played by Matt Bomer.
Yeah, Matt Bomer, who is...
Bomer?
Is
it Bomer?
Bomer.
There's only one B-O-M-E-R.
I've always pronounced it that.
Surely
Bomer.
It'd be a double M if it was Bomer.
I think
I'm going Bomer.
Bomer.
Anyway.
Bomer Bomer. Who is a very good screenwriter and tries to help him throw into the mix union issues. And
it's German money funding this. So it's kind of a real big problem for them, isn't it? That they want to, the Germans want to have control. And the sort of main crux of the story is that Monroe had married an Irish immigrant, Mina, and she had tragically died in a car accident. And what he is 3 days into production on is a film about her life. So it's kind of, he's making
that's his
this
passion project.
His passion project is making this film. However, the Germans come in and they say, no, we're not putting our money behind this. He's obviously devastated. He wants to get it made.
Because he's Jewish. So this is the key thing. So he's Jewish. Matt Bomer's character is Jewish. And it's kind of, I think based on real life, you know, a lot of Irving Thalberg was allegedly a movie mogul who was Jewish. The owner of the studio, the Kelsey Grammer character, isn't Jewish. And the Germans come in during the time of the Nazis, and they don't want anything to do with Jews being in these films.
Yeah.
So they're trying to stop him from making this biopic about his wife, about the meeting of a Gentile and a Jew. And there's very interesting stuff going on about how, you know, the Kelsey Grammer character is happy to get rid of all the Jew references for the Germans because he wants to make money.
But the brilliant thing is that Kelsey Grammer has a daughter in it, played by Lily Collins.
Yes.
And she is a feisty little thing who is in love with Monroe, as everybody is, because he's this damaged person. He's also,
he's so handsome as well.
He's got a heart defect, which means that he could die at any moment.
That was a funny scene, wasn't it, where they discussed the heart defect in a very kind of like slightly clunky exposition way. Carry on.
And so, but she is desperate to be in the industry, and she's constantly pitching things to Monroe, but also looking at him doe-eyed, and she wants to make a certain film, and he's like, no, stop it. Don't know. Stop pitching to me.
So my question is, this is like, you know, there's a slight Amazon Prime versus Netflix thing going on, isn't there? Obviously, you know, Netflix is I think, creating more original programming than Amazon Prime. Amazon Prime is pretty close. They've got a lot of, you know, Transparent, I think, is their best show, which is about to start its fourth season coming up.
I forget that's on Amazon.
Quite soon. Absolutely brilliant on Amazon. And they've had quite a few, you know, they have quite a few of their original programs, and this is the latest one. And they do this thing where they have, they did this with this show. So they'll commission pilots, and they'll give quite a lot of money to production companies to make pilots. And they put this went out, like, I think maybe 6 months ago, and they'll get feedback from Amazon Prime subscribers, and they'll rate it, and they will look at the figures, and they'll kind of commission, partly, not completely, based on that. So, you know...
It's ruthless. It's like this ruthless. Movie. It's like the movie industry.
It is interesting. So my question is this up there with the kind of thing... I mean, Netflix has been had variable stuff recently. We've talked about, you know, one show we really liked, didn't we? We really
Girl Boss. No, it was the one we didn't like.
We didn't like so much, and you know, Ozark we liked.
Oh, Ozark, yeah.
Yeah, Ozark
great.
We liked. The one before about the psychological, the psychiatrist.
Gypsy.
Thank you. Naomi didn't like Watts. So much. Was a bit
Who's
boring.
Who's now going out with Billy Crudup?
Okay, Billy Crudup. So my
heard it
my,
first. Sorry,
my long-winded
it's very
question is, where does this fit in the kind of new Netflix Amazon Prime series that drop in their entirety as this one is?
I wouldn't recommission this one.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. My God. Scathing.
I didn't enjoy it at all. Mm. I mean, I thought, like, I really loved it for the glitz and the glamour. I mean, I thought the
it
costumes...
Looks amazing,
yeah,
isn't it?
They've thrown a lot of money at it. The costumes are fantastic. I think the costume designer did Mad Men as well. You know, you can really see that, especially
Lily Collins'
character, Cecilia. She wears fantastic outfits and stuff like that. But it's just... I mean, it focuses on the bleaker side of the industry, you know, all the ruthlessness and the negotiations of the movie bosses. And, you know, I thought the whole union stuff, I just wasn't interested in. I felt like I got bogged down by that. And I just felt like it was quite clunky. And it wasn't very, even though it's such a glamorous, glossy production, it didn't feel finessed in any way.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Steph?
I didn't like it for the first 20 minutes. And then what happens is Monroe's character meets another Irish girl.
Yeah.
Kathleen.
And then I got excited because I wanted it to have a proper love story element. And then I liked it after. And then there's a great shocking thing that happens at the end of this episode, which will keep me interested for the next one. I'll definitely watch the next one. It wasn't my absolute favourite. And I'm going to kind of disagree. You're both saying that you thought that it looked really beautiful. I don't know what it is about the lens, but it didn't seem to have the Netflix sheen on it for me. It didn't
It's not a Netflix show.
Yeah, but that's what I mean.
It
didn't have the Netflix sheen. Do you know what I mean? It didn't seem as beautifully filmed. For me, I didn't think it was as beautifully filmed.
For me, the best thing about it was the way it was filmed. Interesting kind of camera work and kind of quite clever dissolves and this kind of thing, kind of some trickery. I thought it did look good. My issue with it is I think it's got a really good... I think the idea of adapting that novel was really good. I think I'm really interested in Hollywood in the 30s and the whole Jewish thing and the Germans. I thought that was really interesting. I feel that the dialogue is clunky.
They're trying to speak in that very old... That is a really good point. They're speaking in a very kind of old Hollywood way. I agree, but it does seem like they're doing that.
But I don't think it's just that. I think it's the right... the script. Like, I know it's obviously based on... But I mean, it hasn't been updated anyway.
The dialogue in the script. It's just, I'm interested in the storylines, kind of. But I think the stuff that the actors are forced to come out with doesn't... whether you're right, whether he's trying to replicate the way people spoke, in which case, I don't know what the point of
but
that is.
This ironically feels like the bad film that they're you know.
Yeah,
the
I just think I feel the actors... I'm looking at Kelsey Grammer, for example, you know, who I love. He's one of my greatest things of all time. And
of
I
course.
Feel he's not comfortable saying these lines. They're unnatural. And I feel it's a complete mistake on the part of the writer the guy who wrote it and created it and is running the show is a guy called Billy Ray, who wrote Captain Phillips and The Hunger Games. He's a good screenwriter. Mm. I just feel whatever he's trying to do, maybe it's deliberately making it unnatural, what they're saying, but I just feel it's awkward and annoying.
You know what it reminds me of? Yeah. Right. You know Hail Caesar, the film Hail Caesar?
I was going to mention Hail Caesar.
Were you? Well, see, incredible.
Absolutely.
I love that film. That's how it's done for me.
Exactly.
When you're going to do an old something
Steph,
about Hollywood.
I was going to... I'd were literally you? Written down Hail Caesar. Because Hail Caesar, the Coen brothers film, is set in the 50s. So it's a later time period. But it deals with a lot of the same stuff.
Exactly.
A lot of the same stuff. And it's just a masterpiece, isn't it? It's funny.
Yeah.
It's moving. Mm. It's kind of slightly political, a little bit about how stuff was working back in the day. And I just, this is so not anywhere near as good. And if I'd have been Amazon, I would have been like, hold on.
Hail Caesar
arrived now.
Yeah.
Let's try and get someone to do something with that.
I totally agree.
That tone.
Yeah.
Rather than this very, it's very serious. It's quite ponderous, I think, is my problem with it. So yeah, I'm not, I was disappointed, I have to say.
I agree.
How many stars, Kay, for The Last Tycoon?
I'm going to give it 3 stars and I won't be tuning in for the second episode.
Steph?
I'm going to give it 3. I do want to see what happens, but yeah, I mean, it's no Hail Caesar.
I think I might give it 2. I just feel I'm really...
Is this a snooze fest?
I just think, you know, I think these days you've got to have more to a show that really grabs you and keeps you going. And I don't feel like there's anything about it that makes me want to carry on watching it.
I'm just going to make one more point about Matt Bomer.
Do it.
Right.
Matt Bomer.
The other thing that is a bit disappointing is, have you seen The Normal Heart?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay, so The Normal Heart is
the
an incredible
HBO
film.
It was shown on Sky Atlantic, with, thing about gay,
Julia Roberts.
About
and
HIV,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And he's such an incredible actor in that. And in this, I didn't think he was
and
that
really
good an actor.
He's in the Magic Mike films. He's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has to strip off and do that. And he's very incredibly handsome. But I just think, but I don't blame him. I blame the script. I don't think he's given enough interesting stuff to say.
Right.
And they're all speaking in this, as I've said, this unnatural way. It's weird. Anyway, enough of that. It is, if you want to have a look and see what you think, it's on Amazon Prime starting this Friday and will drop in full as they do.
People
on
might like it.
People on the
let
ground.
Let us know.
Pogs.
Absolutely.
Yeah, actually,
let us
I really
know.
Want to know if Pogs like this.
Finally, we turn to Insecure, which is the second season of this HBO original comedy series. It's created by Issa Rae, who stars in it, and plays a woman called Issa, so it's kind of, you know, clearly based partly on her life. It's co-created with Larry Wilmore. Do you know Larry Wilmore? He's this brilliant guy who's been on, like, those kind of satirical news shows. Satirical news shows in America. And he's very funny. They kind of, they created it together, but he's not in it at all. It's all about her and her friendship with her best friend. They're in LA. They're in the kind of, they're kind of trying to maintain relationships. In the first season, I don't know how much you saw of it, she had this kind of long-term relationship with this very handsome guy. They split up. And now they're in this kind of like weird situation where they're still friends, but they don't know whether...
Well, she cheated on him, didn't she?
She cheated on him, yeah. I mean, he wasn't an angel either. And so it's kind of all about her best friend Molly, played by Yvonne Orji, I think is how you pronounce it. And it's kind of in the milieu, if I can use that word, apologies, of LA singles, 20-something, 30-something, how they're balancing their life and their lives, isn't it? That's the kind of world of it.
Everyone compares it to Girls, don't they?
Yeah.
Because obviously...
Absolutely,
written by Lena, starring Lena, and same with this.
Yeah, and it does... And like Girls, I guess, and also like, I mean, you might say the British things, like Fleabag and Chewing Gum.
Yeah.
It's a woman's point of view, isn't it, about modern-day sex and relationships, and there's a lot of quite raunchy sex action in it.
Very raunchy.
But, right.
Oh,
okay,
yeah, we
okay.
should have. Yep.
I sense already some disturbing, slightly.
Prudence, come on.
Yeah, prudishness. And so what do we think? You know, I'm a fan of this show. I watched season one on. So it's on Sky Atlantic's Now TV. I watched season one. I thought it was really, really funny. Very believable. I completely believed in the
very
whole thing.
Believable.
But what about you two? I feel you're virgins to the whole thing. This is almost a return to the virgin viewing slot, isn't it?
I really liked it. I thought it was really funny and I really liked the realism of it. Like going back on the dating scene, all the online stuff, her horrendous date she has. Also the tactic of trying to get Lawrence, who is her ex-boyfriend who she cheated on, back by... faking a party, well, having a party, but to make out like she's really, you know, getting on in life, everything's really good. You know, I'm fine. You know, inviting him over to collect his post in the hope that he'll want to
and Molly,
love.
The friend, kind of realizing halfway through this is what she's done. She's created this party just to get him.
Exactly. So, I thought it was very funny. I wanted to see the second episode because I wondered if it got even funnier. And it does, so keep tuned.
Yeah, I like the opening sequence where she is going on all those different dates. But let's just talk about the sex.
Yes.
Because there's a lot of it.
Yes.
And it's they're really naked. You know, like, I know that sounds weird, but they're all proper fully naked when they have their sex. It's like real writhing
like
around.
Like girls. They don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, like girls. Yeah. But the sex scenes are realistic and believable.
Really, realistic.
I mean, you know, it's not hardcore porn or anything.
No, it's not hardcore porn. It's very
I know
nice.
You mean. There's bodies. There's normal, you see the women fully naked and the men fully naked. Yeah, I know what you're saying. Yeah, but you're against that.
Do you know
that.
What? It's not that. I think it's because I watched it this morning and it's probably too early to start the day watching a lot of sex. I think
you don't want that much nudity.
8:45 is not the time to watch it. This is not one.
I mean,
for
it's going
train.
Out at 10:35 on Skyline.
I think it's fine. 10:35
Yeah, that's the time slot to watch it.
I think maybe that's my issue with it.
10:30 sex allowed. 8:45 sex
in
not
the
allowed.
Morning. I was just like, oh god, there's some boobs. Oh god, there's a bum.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Great. All in great shape. Fantastic. But well done you.
If that hadn't been in great shape, you'd have been even more furious.
I would have just been like, yeah.
Body fascist.
Yeah, I was eating biscuits at the same time. It was a bit odd.
Oh well, you know.
I wasn't in the right setting. I should have had some
listeners,
candles. Blah,
do
blah.
Not eat biscuits while watching Insecure. No. I think that's one.
Or indeed in bed.
Piece
you
of advice. Oh no, of course not. What would you even think about such a
well,
thing?
Some people do.
Oh, like anyway. Alan Partridge eats like cheesy crackers.
Exactly.
In bed.
And I'm just like
and
him.
He complains in the morning.
But also the other thing I would say is I really, really love the music, and I've just seen on the
point.
Notes
yeah.
that it's
yeah.
Raphael Sadiq, who I love.
Yes.
Beautiful
the
music.
Was, yeah, the music was really good.
Yeah.
But didn't you think, the thing I love about it, actually, because it's interesting, you said, you know, you hinted, you said the second episode was funnier than the first. It's not a thing with jokes. Like, it's,
oh,
you know,
no, no, no.
It's the comedy comes from just the observations of what the characters are doing. And my favourite element of it, and this was definitely true of the first season, it's in there in this first episode of the second season, is just when they're the women just sitting there chatting, chewing the fat,
absolutely.
Talking about stuff going on. I think they're
the
best
bits. It's
realistic
as well.
Yeah, it's so... And I don't know the extent to which it's improvised. I kind of think it isn't. I think she's scripted it very, very closely. But it's so real, those conversations. They're so funny. And they're so well observed. And not much happens. I mean, not much happens in any episode, to be honest. It's very
It's a bit like Master of None.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It is like Master of None, which is, I guess, like a more male version of this scene. But it's even less plot heavy than, you know, Girls sometimes has quite, doesn't it, has quite kind
they
of plot
go
heavy
road
episodes.
Trips and things, yeah.
Yeah, and there's kind of, this is, it's very plot light, you know. But I think that's, I really like that about it. It's very loose and freewheeling.
One of my favourite scenes was just her trying on different outfits, right. ready for his visit, just talking to herself. Yeah. So nothing's essentially happening.
She has some great stuff. There's some great like internal monologue. We see her, you know, what's going on in her mind in that opening dating scene where she's like speed dating with these guys and she's kind of like, she's really thinking about them. Very funny stuff like that all the way through. There's little moments where she's almost talking to camera and stuff. I think it's a really
they
good
They do
show.
Drop the M-bomb a lot, I just have to warn. If you're of sensitive nature. Like...
Yeah, but I think it's real. Again, that's real, isn't it?
Oh my God,
I think,
totally real. But
you know, black people among themselves are allowed to choose the N-word,
do you
aren't
know
they?
What? I thought you said the M-word. I was like, what is the M-word? what could that possibly be? M.
Well, you weren't offended by the use of the M-word, though.
No. Oh, God, no, not at all. No,
yeah,
no, no.
Yeah. No, yeah. That's right.
No, just adds to the hyper-realism.
Hyper-realism. Oh, absolutely. Mm. That's exactly what it bloody well is.
So, sorry, I know you just
said... Don't be sorry.
So, Issa Rae, the person who is Issa Rae...
She's the main character.
She's the main character and she wrote it.
She's written it.
Oh, God, so it's basically...
Lena
that's why it's so funny.
Oh, yeah,
she's
the Lena Dunham of this show. Yeah. She's the... Yeah, absolutely, 100%. She's the Phoebe Waller-Bridge. She's the Michaela Cole. All of these... I think it's brilliant. Without wanting to sound like, you know, I'm reiterating the point, but it is great.
It's such a feminist.
I'm you know, for me, the future's all about female.
Oh, God, of course it is.
Boydy.
Sorry. You can vomit now if you want. But anyway, yes, bottom line, Insecure, it's really good, isn't it, Kay? How many stars are you going to give it?
I'm giving 4 stars. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I'm going to give it 4.5.
Oh, I'm going to give it 4.
It starts season 2. I think season 1, by the way, Zavelli was a box set on Sky and Now TV. So if you want to catch up before it starts next Thursday, the 3rd of August at 10:35 p.m, which is the right time to watch it.
Not 8:45.
Because of all the sex and nudity.
A lot of sex.
And now as we wind up towards the end of what I hope we haven't gone over our hour, otherwise Kay's going to be furious. Oh. It's time. It's question time.
Question time. You fell apart there.
You did.
John Dan made me laugh.
You're pointing at our producer, guru, editor, John Dan. Blaming
most
him.
Importantly, friend.
I didn't give my order. I can only apologise.
He's just sitting there.
Listen, I'm sorry.
Yeah. The question this week, to tie into the Public Enemy's Jay-Z v Kanye documentary that we all watched, what's your favourite Kanye moment of all time? Steph.
Oh, my favourite Kanye moment of all time is when he appears in Entourage. Has anyone seen it? I'm a huge Entourage fan.
Oh my God, how good was it on a scale of Ed Sheeran, GOT?
Don't even say those words to me.
Fine.
Get out. That was horrendous. Okay, so do you remember the period of Kanye's life when he was wearing a lot of golf jumpers?
Yeah.
Do you remember
the
that?
Golf jumper era?
Okay, so he was wearing a green, I think I'm remembering this correctly, a green and yellow golf jumper with kind of a red. And basically, they need to get on a jet. The Entourage boys need to get on the jet. And he's like, you can get on my jet. And he's wearing, you know, those glasses that have got like the shutter, like blinds, like shutters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's that phase of his life. And I truly believe that has captured the essence of Kanye at his happiest.
I'm gonna have to go back and
watch. It's really funny.
You mean like now he's wearing like, you know, Supreme obviously a lot and sneakers and stuff.
Yeah. Did he wear Supreme?
Totally, of course.
I mean, I thought he was wearing Yeezy.
Well, Yeezy trainers, yeah, and Yeezy, but yeah, he's often seen wearing Supreme. Yeah,
do Supreme
all the
do a golf jumper?
They have done kind of golf. Oh, they do everything. Yeah, they've done a golf
jumper
before.
I'm waiting for the Yeezy Supreme collab.
Mm. It could happen. Although the problem with Yeezy is because Adidas and Supreme only really do collabs with Nike.
All the information.
Yeah.
God, yeah.
Of course,
so
Kanye did do Nike first. That was his first big thing, and then he fell out with them.
Yeah,
but those Yeezy shoes, by the way, they're horrible.
Anyway.
Horrendous.
They are lovely.
They're disgusting. That's the final test of your kind of sneakerhead is if you're taken in by the whole Yeezy design.
I'm totally
design.
Taken in.
Oh,
I love the new white ones as well, but I love him.
No, they're terrible.
I like you, but I've got some, but they're not Yeezys. Enough. They're from Thailand, and I call them Feezies.
Fake Yeezys. Yeah. Oh, that's fine. Oh, I admire the fake Yeezy. Yeah, that's fine. But they are horrendous. Anyway, Kay, what is your favourite Kanye moment?
Oh, all the moments. But I like all the moments he's on the Kardashians because, as you know, I'm a Kardashians fan, keeping up the Kardashians. But he always looks like a little schoolboy about to be told off, and he's really shy. And I don't realise how shy he is, but he just barely can get a sentence out.
That's not a moment, Kay.
They're all moments.
I think you've got to narrow it down to a moment. I'm not accepting this. Come on.
All right, what about the time that he was on a zip line with Kim Kardashian?
That's a great moment.
Right. Okay,
thank
fine.
You. What episode of Keeping Up with Kardashians is that?
It's series 13, episode 12.
I would have believed that if you hadn't looked slightly clearly like you're making it up. I would have completely, you could have done that with a straight face and I would have totally believed it.
I know, but I'm always smiling.
My favourite, if you're wondering, Kanye moment is that brilliant video he did for the song Famous. Do you remember when they're all naked in the bed with him? And
Donald
it featured
Trump?
Kim naked, George W. Bush,
Taylor
Anna
Swift.
Wintour, Donald Trump, Rihanna, all Chris Brown, Caitlyn Jenner, Bill Cosby and Taylor Swift, all like these amazing, it was brilliantly done. It was you know, and I think it did show because I'm not a huge, you know, it's not. I'm not a massive rap music fan. I'm not a fan of that kind of music generally.
You surprise us.
Patronising. I'll keep my finger on the nub of what's going on. But that Nonny is that great song. I think that's one of his best songs.
I was going to ask you, what's your favourite Kanye song?
That's one of my favourites. But that video was a proper piece of like genuinely a great idea, brilliantly executed. And I think it shows like he is a really, really smart, clever,
he's an artist,
amazing.
Boyd.
Totally. He is literally an artist.
I think my moment's the best out of all of your moments. I'm sorry.
No, I think my moment's
the best.
I think we know Kay's is definitely the worst because she was forced to narrow it down because she was any moment he's in.
In the Kardashians.
Kardashians.
Yours is too recent
history.
Which
is by definition not a moment.
No, mine was the best.
God.
Let's rank them. Mine was the best.
Mine was the best.
It's descended into anarchy.
It's descended into over an hour.
Apologies, dear listener. Steph is off to New York, aren't you?
I'm off to New York.
But you'll be back in
2 hours.
Time for next week's podcast.
I've changed my holiday to make sure that I can come back.
Please do send us all your feedback. Please rate us and review us on the iTunes. And we'll be with you next week. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.